Hey, everybody. This is Edie Harrow on Rejuvenation for the Land of Israel Network. You are listening to this on August 21st, 2016, the 17th day of Av 5776. And what you're going to hear in just a few minutes is a pre-recorded interview with Dr. Claudio Procaccia. Why is it that everything in Italian sounds like yummy food? Anyway, he is the head of the Department of Jewish Culture in Rome. I conducted the interview in his office at the beautiful synagogue in Rome, and that's also where they have a magnificent museum, a Jewish museum. After a few-hour tour that he personally gave to my husband and to myself of where the ghetto used to stand, of the museum itself, and of the synagogue. Really a very special man, very passionate about Roman Jewry, about very knowledgeable also about the ancient synagogue and Ostia Antica that we had gone to the day before. That's the ancient port of Rome and the catacombs. And just, you know, we speak about Rome from the other perspective when we're in Israel, when we're in Judea. Pax Romana, right? The Roman Empire. When we look at it from our perspective, we're one of its victims. But for Rome, subduing Judea and then extending the Roman Empire was an important thing, was a good thing, was a big thing. And where do the Roman Jews fit into that? They were like caught somewhere in the middle, not unlike what's happened to Jews in other places all over the diaspora, all over the many millennia of our existence, where there is some kind of, not necessarily a dual loyalty, because the Jews of ancient Rome were not loyal to Rome and what Rome was doing to Judea, but they were managed to survive the destruction of Judea and even redeem some of the Jews that were brought to Rome as slaves. So it's a fascinating, fascinating piece of our history. And for this interview and for the introduction to Claudio, I must thank Dr. Harold Rode and Fiamma Nierenstein, two dear friends. And Fiamma is, she was an Italian parliamentarian. She was supposed to be Israel's ambassador to Italy, but that didn't work out. Journalist, lovely, lovely person, and they're the ones who connected me with Claudio, and it made just such a special trip. So I have more to say about my trip to Rome. Just a couple of words, in addition to the tour of the synagogue that you're going to hear about now. We walked around, of course, it's not our first time in Rome, stood under the Arch of Titus, the arch that's built that shows the destruction of the temple and taking out the menorah and the incense pan from Jerusalem into Rome, and to stand there and know that I live in Judea and Judea is not captured anymore is really like just a tremendous thank you to Hashem for my faith and for my people not losing the faith. And the beautiful story in 1948 about how the Jews, when Israel is reborn and the Jews are once again sovereign in our land, the Jews of Rome go back to that Arch of Titus and they walk through the arch in the direction of Jerusalem. And it takes a long time to correct a historic wrong, but correct it we will. To walk around, and now they've excavated what's called the Temple of Peace, the temple that Vespasian built, where he showed off the things that he had taken, that they had stolen from the temple in Jerusalem before they burnt the temple down, like the menorah. And an aggravating thing, I'm looking at the sign, and I'm seeing that it says on the sign, when Vespasian subdued Palestine. Okay, leaving the word subdued aside, Palestine? Seriously? Okay, Judea is called Judea then. It's not till 100 years later with Hadrian, when he puts down the Bar Kokhba revolt, that he wants to wipe out the memory of Jews in Judea, that he renames the area Syria-Palestine, having nothing to do with any modern version of Palestinians or anything like that. So even on a sign in Rome here to say subdued Palestine, like, that's a slight rewrite of history. But lots of security getting into all these places. And I've got a feeling that they're not worried about Jews or Christians. So we went into the Colosseum and stood and looked at where there were gladiator games and where the Romans threw my ancestors, the slaves, you know, to the animals and to gladiators. And we learned a part of the Torah portion for this week because our sages said so long ago, at the height of the misery that the Romans were putting my people through, that one day in these places where the Romans played their awful and cruel games, we were going to learn Torah, and the Romans would be no more. And we fulfilled that. So, again, took a long, long time, but it's really something else to be a part of that. So much more to say about Rome and about Florence and about my trip to Italy, but I won't keep you in suspense. So write to me, everybody, eve@thelandofisrael.com. Always love hearing from you and enjoy the interview.
You're listening to Rejuvenation with Eve Harrow.
Today finds me in Rome. It's August 2016, the waning days of Av, 5776, and I'm in Italy for a few days, and I had the great honor of being taken around the area of the ghetto, but much more than that, here in Rome, with Claudio Procaccia, who's the director of the Department of Jewish Culture. So thank you so much, first of all.
I thank you for your visit, and I hope you enjoyed the tour. And now, I hope there's a first step and to work together to promote the history and the culture of the Roman Jews.
So tell me, why is it so important to, in particular, to remember what happened here in Rome with the Jews? You know, Europe is full of communities where there were Jews, there was a ghetto, until things were good with whoever needed us. And then, as we said, then a pharaoh who didn't know Joseph arose, someone who was mean, and we got thrown out, and that was the end. But there's a special connection that the Jews have with Rome, a very ancient connection. So why is that? What was happening here so long ago?
Well, is Roman Jews are the most ancient cultural group of Rome. Jews are here since the second century before the Christian age, before the Colosseum. And of course, imagine it 2,000 years ago, where all pagans except the Jews in Rome. In the 8th century, all population were Christians except the Jews. So it means in terms of identity that Jews resisted to any kind of globalization or transformation of this city. They were witnesses and protagonists of the transformation of Rome since the ancient age, with the alliance of Rome and Republican Rome against the Syrians. And then, of course, that's the reason why Maccabean government sent ambassadors to Rome to make an alliance. And then we have documentation inside this alliance, inside the Maccabean books.
So what you're saying is, we talk about the Maccabees, the Hashmonaim, the story of Hanukkah. So you're talking about a period that's well within the Second Temple period. Yes. So there is, Judea is still being, where Jews live, and being run by Jews, and the kings of the Jews, of the Hasmoneans. So you're saying, though, that emissaries were sent from Judea, the province of Judea, here to Rome, which was not Italy then. Maybe a little bit of a history lesson, because it's so complicated.
Okay, imagine that we were before the Roman Empire, during the Roman Republic, when, of course, Republic Rome was a widespread area, and was close to becoming a real empire, but was not just an empire, was already an empire, was not. And that's in, imagine it was, Rome was conquering the entire world at that time, and even the Middle East was an important area for the expansion of Rome, and that's give sense to the alliance with Judea at the time. Rome, and imagine that at that time Judea was under the pressure of the Seleuciti, and then that's the reason why they ask an alliance with Rome in order to contrast the expansion of the Syrians and the control. You know, everybody knows the history of Hanukkah, the story of Hanukkah, then that is important that after that period, many Jews joined the first few Jews that were already here, maybe even before the ambassadors, but we have not documentation or archaeological empirical evidences of the presence of Jews before. But probably during the expansion of Rome and the contact with the eastern parts of Europe, they were already in contact, even before that was due, because the trade of the Mediterranean basin was widespread and huge since the ancient time, and Jews probably were part of this kind of integration and globalization of the international trade. What is important to point out from my point of view is that did not exist a proper Jewish community as you imagine today. There were several groups of Jews moving from different areas of the Mediterranean basin, I think of course from Judea, even as slaves under Pompeius in the 60s before the Christian age, 100 years, roughly 100 years before Titus. And then, of course, from Alexandria, in Egypt, from the Libyan. How you know that? Thanks to several documentation, even included in particular from the East Lapidaris of Jewish catacombs in Rome. There's very important archaeological sites that very few people know, but though in those catacombs are buried many bodies of people, of ancients that of the people that move from Rome in many other parts of the world.
Okay, so just I'm going to make this for myself, but also for some of my listeners. We've just finished with the 3 weeks, and one of the things that we fasted for in Tisha B'Av is the destruction of the Second Temple by the Romans. So for many of us, there's a negative idea of Rome coming in, because we know the end of the story. But what Claudio is saying is that before the end of that story, when the Roman Empire is first starting to get strong, the Jews of Judea, and think of Judea now as the province of Judea, and the Judeans as a political entity and a kingdom, really, as a kingdom, are having pressure from the north, from the area of today, whatever's left of Syria, from the Seleucid, from the Greeks coming in. And we actually ask the Romans to come in. This is in the first and second century BCE. We ask the Romans to come in. And it seems like an obvious thing to do, because the Jews are spread all over the Mediterranean, because as usual, we are traders. And so there are Jews in what is today's Rome who have come from different places and who have influence and are part of the beginnings of the Roman Empire. And we bring the Romans actually then into the area of Judea. Yeah. So it turns out to have not been such a great idea in 70, when they destroyed the temple and when they, you know, keep us down for then the Bar Kokhba revolt in the second century with Rabbi Akiva. But at the beginning, it was different. And the Jews of Rome, some of whom have come from Judea or all over, Claudio says we have archaeological evidence in the catacombs where Jews were buried underneath Rome, something I didn't get to today, but I would very much like to come back to Rome and go down to the catacombs and document what is there, what is in those catacombs.
Well, in those catacombs, of course, we've got bodies of Jews buried, and we have discovered just the late catacombs or the late cemeteries where the Jews were buried, 4th, 5th, 6th century. And there, of course, there is plenty of decoration with the typical Jewish symbols, the menorah, the holy ark, and the shofar, the trog, the lulav, and so on. And then it's important, the self-conscious of the people, of any people, when the human being started to understand themselves, and what they started to do, to bury people and create altar. So in Rome we got the catacombs and the Ostia Antica synagogue, the way that it used to pray in the ancient Rome. So that's why it's so important, this community, because the synagogue of Ostia Antica is the only one that we know. Then out of many, many synagogues used to exist during the Roman Empire, but thanks to the stratification, give us an idea of the transformation of Judaism after the destruction of the Second Temple.
So last week, for those of you who listened to my show last week, I interviewed Dr. Daniel Falk, and he spoke about synagogues and what he thinks happened in the synagogues. And there's a lot of difference of opinion. But what is for sure and can't be argued is that after the temple is destroyed in 70, Judaism takes a tremendous turn. And the synagogues really become a place of prayer. Whether there was prayer happening in the temple or in different places is still a matter of research. But definitely the synagogues go from places of gathering, of assembly and Torah learning, to prayer areas. So yesterday, my husband and I were in Osteantica, which is what Claudia was just speaking about, and we saw a synagogue, as far as I know, the oldest synagogue that's been found yet in Europe, that existed while the temple existed. It was built in the 40s.
Roughly. The datation is very difficult. But what we know that the Jews of Rome and Ostia, that was the port of Rome, used to pray in synagogues. It used to stay, cause build up synagogues, even before the destruction of the Second Temple. Of course, we have more information about the life of the Jews after the destruction of the Second Temple rather than before. Even the synagogue's datation is probably from the 1st, 2nd century. So, but the idea of many Jews that were here was the idea of the temple. We should imagine Rome have a very important community among the Mediterranean basin, and even in terms of relation with Jerusalem. We still on Pesach eat the lamb in memory of the Korban Pesach, mm-hmm. and that's it was a specific
the Paschal sacrifice,
yeah.
Right?
And then it's interesting in order to understand how was have a specific minag, a specific tradition, Roman Jews, and how even after the destruction of the Second Temple and the long-term Judaic wars did not change much the life of the Jews. Many slaves became in Rome. They were liberated by the other Jews. The menorah was taken here in the Tempio della Pace, the Temple of Peace in the Foro Romano, close to the Arch of Titus. We'd have the imagine of the menorah that moved a pasture with the Jews, with the slaves, through another arch that existed before the Titus Arch. And it's interesting that this is a long-term period of presence of the Jews without any solution, without any end until today. And that give us an idea to be part of the city, but the city is part of us even if Romans destroyed the temple. But Romans disappear, we are still here.
So, you know, we tend to think of, as Jews, we tend to think of us in the diaspora as, you know, surviving without Judea. Claudio is raising such an interesting point, which is that to a great degree, we are witnesses to other civilizations coming and going, not just from Judea, but when we go out in the diaspora, especially in a place like Rome, the Jews are the oldest people to be here from ancient Rome. The Christians come afterwards, the pagans are gone, the Etruscans are gone, everybody who preceded came and went. Italy today is very different than it was. Italy is really a very modern country on that level. And here we have this long line of the Jews. Now, there is, my understanding is there's a Nusach Romi, there's a traditional liturgy of the way the Jews pray in Rome that's different, because anybody who's wandered into a different kind of synagogues knows there's different songs and there's different tunes and sometimes even different words or the way that the prayers are lined up. The Roman liturgy is unique?
Well, used to be very specific until the end of the ghetto, until the construction of the Great Synagogue in 1904, when we had a fusion of different liturgies that used to be. Imagine that the liturgies is a fusion of transformation of the ancient communities with the influence afterwards of the Sephardic synagogue, of Sephardic liturgies. And so imagine that during the ghetto age, between 1555 and 1870, there were five different synagogues: Minagim, Castilian, Catalonian, Sicilian, from Jews moving from South Italy because of the Inquisition, and Roman synagogue, the Schola Tempio. The Schola means shul. The Schola Tempio was a typical used by Roman Jews, specific, different from the Italian Jews that used to have the Schola Nova, the new synagogue. So imagine that. And there was even the result of other transformation in the Middle Age period, where they used the French synagogue, the Ashkenazi synagogue, the Aragonian synagogue. Can you imagine how different? And then there's a long-term transformation. We still have the Machazorim, the Chumashim, the prayer books of the different five synagogues. It was
so. If we're looking for what the ancient Judeans, how they prayed, the songs that they used, what they used in the temple, is it possible that the Roman liturgy is the closest, because they didn't write sheet music? We don't know. We don't know what they did.
There are some tracks, even in the pronunciation of the ancient Minag, very, we say in Italian words, gutturale, from
guttural.
From the, And there was a, we said we did, used to say no arvit, man gervid. We didn't say arvit engervim. That was typical expression, a way to. Now it's going to disappear. It's like Judaico Romanesco, the language that they used to speak in the ghetto age. Typical languages, as a fusion of different languages: Hebrew, of course, Italian, but even Spanish, we say, to say cold, we say frio. In Italian language, it's freddo. Okay? When you say something that's, in Hebrew, is bad, in Hebrew, shachor, we say, like, we use
black.
This word, black, or negro. When you say, ah, it's a negro, it's a shachor. We use the same words. In Italian language, is nero, and cattivo, bad, and so on. We say this was, imagine how is complex the language, and traditions, and identity.
So it's a unique dialect to Roman Jewry.
It's not very well known. It used to be the Judaico-Romanesco dialect. It's like the Yiddish for Roman Jews.
Or like Ladino.
Ladino and so on. Yeah, exactly.
So the museum here is absolutely fantastic. Can you tell my listeners a little bit about it?
Okay, from the 60s, the Roman Jewish community wanted a museum. It was originally an exhibition, started as an exhibition, temporary exhibition. And then through the years, became a museum. Many people worked in to build up this amazing museum, made by mainly by the collection of the furniture of the five synagogues that were demolished in 1908, 4 years after the construction of the Great Synagogue. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable in terms of ritual history, textile history, because our furniture from the 16th century to the 19th century mainly. And is in 2005 was built up in the new museum, and it's beautiful, and every year it's changing in an Uzi using the multimedia systems in order to explain to the people, not just the expert, but everybody, many schools, many children, and come here, and students, in order to understand, to know the history of the Roman Jewish community and the Jewish culture in general terms. And these are, it's not so big museum, but very beautiful and very important, not just to know the history of Roman Jewish community, but to know the history of the Judaism, because Rome was very important part of the history of the Judaism, and even the influence of Rome and Roman Jews in the history, the entire Judaism is very important.
So one of the collections that you have in the museum is of the beautiful, the Me'ilim, the beautiful material that covered the Torah scrolls. Always, always you see the love of the Jews for the Torah and the care and the embellishment of the Torah.
Sure.
But you were telling us that the Jews weren't part of the guilds, part of the difficulty that the Jews had in surviving all over Europe during the past couple of millennia, was in being able to make a living. And they were, we couldn't own land, so we weren't part of the feudal system. And we couldn't belong to guilds, so there were certain things we couldn't do. So maybe explain what we could do and how we got around that.
Especially during the ghetto age, the situation on Renaissance Rome was completely different from the ghetto age. Jews have more chance to work in different sectors. With the ghetto, we have a turning point that went on for 300 years and more, 315 years. That it meant that you Jews have to work to live in a specific area with gates, and we cannot work anymore in several areas and move freely in any other part of the city, on other countries, or part of the pop state, in particular from the end of the 16th century, where all Jews were expelled from the rest of the pop state, had to stay in Rome, Ancona, and Avignon in France. And the Jews were out of the guild system, and they couldn't work as artisans to make jewels and gold, silver, and they used to commit to Christian artisans several stuff in order to decorate the five synagogues, except the textiles. Jewish women, and we know the names of those women.
Really?
Then they made the Me'ilim, of course, the Mappot, and so on. And that's why it's so important, the relationship between the other staff or the objects are in the museum and the documentation of our archives, even included the Chumashim of the Middle Age. Mm-hmm. We have the most ancient Chumash is about 1202. And this is, of unfortunately, what is remain about during the after the Nazi period, when they stolen more than 7,000 books of this ancient community, move experts from Germany to come here and in order to select these important manuscripts and books of even later period, but very important. And another important thing is that libraries and archives all over Rome, they keep important documentation books, very important from the Judaica. They even have imagine of how the Jews used to make the Shechita in the Middle Age.
The ritual slaughter to be able to eat meat for kosher.
And it's very interesting to... So imagine that we have the ancient synagogues of Ostia Antica, catacombs, Middle Age synagogues. Today is a restaurant, but it was important. Synagogue in Rome in the Middle Age was important. Cultural point, cultural areas for Judaism. They used to send rabbis all over Europe from Rome because we're very cultured in order to create a new community in some part, for instance, in Germany, in Magones. And so
there was a Torah academy, there was a place of Jewish
really,
learning?
Not a term that we know, but there were several scholars living and working in Rome. And then in the Middle Age, unfortunately, what changed the situation in Rome was the burn of Talmudim in 1553. From that moment, Jews could not anymore study Talmud in Rome until the contemporary age.
Wow, for almost 500 years, Jews weren't allowed to...
Yeah.
The things were... Books were burnt.
Yeah.
By whom?
By the Pope. I mean, they decided to burn the Talmud in 1553. There was due to a very complex situation that was not in Rome, but for the publication of Talmud. So it's a long story, but was not that the point. The point was we're in time of Counter-Reformation.
When the Catholics and Protestants were fighting each other, wars within Christianity.
Wars between Christians and Muslims. And imagine there was a very difficult period for the entire Europe. Jews were not directly involved in those wars, but at least at the end, even Jews had been involved and they were closed in a ghetto in 1555. Mm-hmm.
So when we were taking the walking tour of the ghetto with you, you pointed out there's a church right across the street from the Great Synagogue that has an inscription in Hebrew on just under the picture of the crucifixion, a quote from the book of Isaiah. What is that all about?
Well, that was a few words. That was the moment in which the prophet blame the Jews because did not follow anymore the right path. In which sense? Did not follow, of course, the Torah, the Jewish rules, the mitzvot. Why was put on a facade on a church in front of the two main gates of the ghetto? That's because Jews had to stay in the ghetto during the night and move during the daytime from the sunset to the sunrise and reverse. The church gave different meaning to those words. The sense changed. The Jews don't follow the right path in their opinion and their view or the relationship, because they did not recognize Jesus as a Messiah. And the ghetto was the empirical evidence and the consequence of the choice they mistake.
So the words that are written by our own prophet to chastise us for not following in God's way are later on used by the Pope and by Christianity to say, look, we're persecuting you, but that's only because that's what God wants, because you went off his path. And so to put that in Hebrew at the entrance and the exit to the ghetto, to every single day the Jews will see, your misfortune is your own fault and not ours.
This is the meaning.
Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I would hope that things are different now.
Today, that place is called Piazza Gerusalemme, Jerusalem Square, because it is, and in Jerusalem, there is Piazza Roma.
Now, 30 years ago, there was a visit of the Pope, of Pope Paul, John Paul II, to the area here, and there's a beautiful exhibit right now in the museum commemorating that visit. How does that change the relationship between the church and the Jewish community?
In my opinion, in a better way, and I can have empirical evidences of this transformation in at least the last 20 years that I'm working here, because I saw how the school students and even ordinary people move inside the museum and the synagogue, approach to the Judaism with curiosity and are without many prejudice. It still exists prejudice. For instance, sometimes they ask me, "Are you born in Italy, in Rome? Are you Italian?" I was here before anyone that live in Rome, and that is interesting. You have got two passports, Israeli passport or Italian passport, and so on. Even not just ordinary people, even teachers sometimes have.
People who should know better.
Yeah, exactly. But even if with all this kind of prejudice, more not good information about the history of Roman Jews. The approach is good. I mean, they are curious to know, they want to know, and they feel that the roots are in the Judaism.
So there's an understanding now, I'm feeling that too, that many Christians are reading the Old Testament, the Bible, understanding that the roots of their religion are in Judaism.
Imagine that in the, many courses, we may organize many courses for the Hebrew language, to learn Hebrew language, and there are large part are not Jewish people that attend to the courses.
Well, to really understand the Bible.
80%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are not Jews.
Yeah, to really understand the Bible, you have to read it in Hebrew and to understand the commonalities, and not that one religion superseded the other. So I have to ask you the million-dollar question that people always saying, that because, of course, the Vatican and the papacy is ancient Rome, right, or sits on some of the treasures. If it's, what do you think, or have you been able to go down and see some of the archives of the Vatican? And are there, you have many beautiful things here in your archives, but what does the Vatican have? And I know they have a lot, but are they sharing it more? Are there things that are more open since the visit of the Pope?
Well, the I study there for my PhD, so I study documentation freely without problems. Of course, not all documentation is can be studied yet. I imagine that you are talking about especially the period of the Second World War, but I didn't study that period, so I didn't ask any documentation for that. I cannot tell you exactly what we can see, what is there, and I think very few people knows exactly how much they have. But I think that to know what happened, that period, we have enough documentation in other archives in order to understand what happened in Rome during the Nazi occupation and in general during the Second World War.
Mm-hmm. But how about the big, big war before that, 2,000 years ago with the sacking of Jerusalem? Are there things in the Vatican, do you think, that even come from Jerusalem from them, or they're all long gone, taken by Vandals or Goths?
Yeah, exactly. It's very difficult to say, but I don't think it's they could have much about. Rome has been sacked so many times through the ages, and even it's difficult to know what come from Jerusalem at that time. The real menorah, a copy, which part of the treasures of the Jerusalem of the temple moved to Rome.
Mm-hmm.
What they did have time to hidden many things.
Right.
Before, of course, die or escape.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's still much to be found, I think, underground in Rome, both under the Vatican and the catacombs. And I'm definitely going to be coming back. I think Rome is such an important part of the survival of the Jews until we made it back to Judea, which we have fortunately now. And there's a wonderful museum of Italian Jewry also in the heart of Jerusalem. And which shows also some of the beautiful things of the last few hundred years. So what is your goal now? You have an important position here as director. What would you like to see be done in order to preserve some of the history of Rome, Roman Jewry?
I think that's still surprising me that, for instance, it's not easy to get inside the catacombs. Some catacombs, in particular Torlonia, must be restored before going to go inside. We're still working on that. That there are not specific itineraries to go directly to the Jewish synagogues of Ostiantica. They are not excavated around the synagogue to know exactly what happened, what was there. They are not so much interested about these so important archaeological areas, catacombs, and even the Middle Age period, and we have to work in this sense in order to create interest around to promote how it's important for the history of Judaism, this city, and this community.
Yeah, I was actually a little, not a little bit, very shocked at how difficult it was in Ostiantica yesterday, where my husband and I were, which is the ancient port of Rome, where this very, very old synagogue was. There wasn't even a sign to go and find it. It took us like 2 hours to find it after a tour of Ostiantica. And it's just derelict. And this would be such an incredible place for people to come to, not just Jews, to come to learn about the history of that time, to learn about the tremendous... Not just the yearning always for Jerusalem and for the temple. You see the menorah, you see the lulav, you see the remnants of the ideas of the figures from the temple, but also how we never lost our faith. We never, ever gave up on our Judaism, and that's why we're still here today.
Exactly. That's what I think is very important to try to improve the situation of studies in this sense. If you want to understand how the Jews used to live in the ancient Rome, you have to go to Ostia, because it's a proper archaeological city, well preserved. It's our Pompeii, and it's not so well known, even Ostia.
Okay, so thank you so much, Dr. Claudio Procaccia, for really a beautiful, insightful day. And Bezrat Hashem, with God's help, I will be back.
Thank you
very, very much. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation. But I'll be back. This is Eve Harrow, host of Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. My maternal grandparents, Grandpa Morris and Grandma Lily, came to the United States from Russia over 100 years ago. They belonged to the Mizrahi movement way before there was even a state of Israel. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement.
When I was growing up, I would read the books in the second half of the Old Testament, and sometimes I would get a little bit lost in all those prophecies of Jeremiah, Isaiah, and so on. That all changed the day I stepped foot in the Land of Israel. As I harvested grapes and olives and more on the mountains of Samaria, the words of the prophets came to life right before my very eyes. Today, you could be a part of this phenomenon too. I am Caleb Waller, and I'm inviting you to step into the pages of prophecy by joining us in Israel. Go to our website, that is hayovel.com, H-A-Y-O-V-E-L.com, to connect to this amazing opportunity.